On this episode of Warbird Radio Presents, we sit down with a World War II P-51 P-47 pilot. Stay tuned. Warbird Radio Presents, The Punchy Pal Story, starts now. When Punchy first walked into the barroom at the 57th Fighter Group restaurant in Atlanta, Georgia, the first thing I noticed was the way that he carried himself. He carried himself more like a guy in his 20s than a man in his late 80s. He was wearing his A2 jacket that has a great painting of his P-51, the West by God Virginian, painted on his back. I have to admit that for a moment I felt like I'd been transported back in time to an old O Club at a fighter base somewhere in England. The restaurant, with all of its 40s decor, was the perfect backdrop to hear his stories. I just couldn't wait. So we sat down in the back room, and it was magic. Punchy opened up, and I look back on it, and I say, man, I wish I'd asked him this or asked him that. But to put it shortly, it was a conversation I will never forget. Here now is Punchy Powell. Well, we're here with Punchy Pal, P-51 and P-47 pilot, here in the fantastic 57th Fighter Group. You couldn't get a better place to interview someone like yourself than the 57th here.
Yeah, that's right. The 57th flew out of Italy in Africa.
Well, tell me about flying the Mustang. You flew with the Blue Nose, was it the Blue Nose Bastards, or what are they called?
Knew us as the Blue Nose Bastards of Bodney. Bodney was the field that we flew out of in England, and we flew Thunderbolts first. We flew those about half of my 87 missions in Thunderbolts. Mm-hmm. And then we switched over to the Mustang in the middle of the war in April of 44. We switched over to the Mustang.
Well, you're the kind of guy then to ask about this. We've had a number of guys that have flown both airplanes, but you're the first person I've met that's actually had combat experience in both of them. Between the two, did you have a favorite, or was there one that you favored over the other?
Well, it's kind of a mixed favorite. The Thunderbolt would take a heck of a beating. I mean, you could get shot up in the Thunderbolt pretty badly and still get it home. But the Mustang was very vulnerable because it had a liquid-cooled engine, and one little bullet in the radiator, and the coolant was gone, and you were gone. I like the Mustang better, but it was a better fighter, all-around fighter. Thunderbolt was not very effective in air-to-air combat under 20,000 feet. But above 20,000 feet, it would match anything the Germans had. And a Mustang, though, was good from ground up. And I flew, as I say, about half of my missions in the Mustang and the other in the Thunderbolts. And the main advantage of the Mustang was its range. The Thunderbolt only carried 305 gallons internally, and even with a belly tank, we could hardly get past the Ruhr Valley and get back to England. But in the Mustang, we could, and it would only fly maybe 3 hours, 3 hours and a half on a mission. If you got in a fight, you burned your gas about twice as fast. And so a lot of times we lost guys in the North Sea because of lack of fuel, whereas the Mustang would fly 6 or 7 hours. Yeah. And my last mission was 6 hours and 50 minutes. And the Mustang, because of its range, was much the better fighter.
Well, I notice you don't have a P-47 on your jacket here.
Wait, what?
You don't have a P-47 on your jacket.
But my original jacket, this jacket is the, my original jacket is in the museum down at Savannah, the 8th Air Force Museum down there. And my wife had this jacket done for me too, because she knew I missed it.
Yeah, well, it's a beautiful jacket, of course.
But on my original jacket, I had a P-47 painted under my wings. Yeah,
both your favorite airplanes. Then. Yeah. Yeah. Well, talk about some of these missions that you flew. A lot of guys, it's rare that we get to sit down with a fighter pilot, and it's rare that we get to sit down, as I mentioned, with someone who flew both. So I'm anxious. I'm all ears. tell me whatever you want to tell us about flying the Mustang and the P-47 back then.
The Thunderbolt, as I said, would outdive anything. I mean, it was really a great airplane. But we had a guy who came back with 270-some holes in it. And His instrument panel was all shattered. His cowling was shot off. And he brought him home. It was a rugged airplane. And for that reason, we liked it. But the Mustang, because of its range, I flew the B model, mm-hmm. which only had four guns. The D models had six guns. But
I guess the Razorback, as they would call it. The Mustang.
The Razorback, yeah.
Right, Mustang.
And in the Mustang, when we started flying a Mustang, that was the B model. It had the greenhouse canopy. It was, mm-hmm. Whereas the D model had the bubble canopy, right, with a little more visibility. That was its main advantage. But it was a little slower than the B model. Mm-hmm. It carried two more guns and the ammunition for those, and that extra weight for one thing. And the other thing is the canopy had a little more friction. So it was the B model was about 5 or 6 miles an hour faster than the D.
How was it in the dogfight? You mentioned you had a few kills yourself.
They were comparable in the dogfight, but you think about dogfights, you really didn't get into too many dogfights. I mean, usually if you shot a plane down, you saw him first,
mm-hmm.
And you had the advantage. Or if you had altitude, you could convert it into speed, and then you had the advantage. So, actually, talk about dogfighting. Every air battle wasn't a dogfight.
Right. The days of the movies, the Battle Over Britain, Battle of Britain, all that, it pretty much left to Hollywood.
Those were mostly dogfights.
Yeah. But that's the modern, I guess, conception of what you guys did. And I guess what you're saying is, leave that in Hollywood. What we did was a little bit different than that.
Most of the time, if you got shot down, you didn't see it. You didn't see the one that got you because he was above you and he came in behind you and you didn't see him. Very few times that you actually got into a dogfight.
Now, what's your most memorable mission?
Well, my most memorable mission was strafing a German airfield. We lost more pilots strafing German airfields than we did in air-to-air combat. We strafed at under 50 feet, which is about the height of a telephone pole.
Right. Now, this is in the P-47, I'm assuming.
No, this is in both airplanes.
Oh, in both airplanes.
Yeah, we strafed with both. After Jimmy Doolittle took over the 8th Air Force, he said, I'm changing your mission. You'll still be escorting bombers, but your mission now is to destroy the Luftwaffe in the air and on the ground. So we strafed. If we came back from a mission, we still had ammunition and fuel. We strafed German airfields, trucks, trains, everything. I flew three missions on D-Day, 16 hours, mostly that was ground support, mostly. The first mission was to keep any German airplanes from getting to the beaches. We had 1,000 fighters up, counting the British fighters.
Wow.
We had 1,000 fighters in the air. We formed a wall of airplanes from 30,000 feet to the deck. No German airplane got to the...
Nobody got through that.
No, nobody got through that. No German pilot had enough guts to go through 1,000 fighters.
What do you remember about that day? Just the sheer number of airplanes?
And the number of hours. Our orders were to shoot up anything that moved toward the beaches.
Mm-hmm.
And we strafed trucks and trains and buses, and anything that was moving toward the beaches had to be enemy because the French had already been warned to stay in, stay off the roads and so forth. Mm-hmm. We shot up everything going toward the beaches. And we lost a few pilots to ground fire, but not too many that day. We did that for about 10 days, and then we went back to bomber escort, and the 9th Air Force took over the ground support.
Now, bomber escort must have been boring compared to this type of flying.
Well, the bomber escort was great unless we ran into a whole horde of German airplanes. Then it became fun.
Did that happen some?
Oh, yeah. We on one mission, we shot down a 37 airplane.
37 airplanes?
Yeah.
And did you get accredited with a kill on that mission yourself?
Or? Not on that mission. I got... We also our biggest and most dramatic battle was on January 1st, 1945. Mm-hmm. The Battle of the Bulge was just over,
mm-hmm.
and the Germans were retreating from the Battle of the Bulge, and our troops were harassing my fighter group. We were on the continent at that time. My fighter group was harassing the retreat of the Germans to the Rhine. Hitler ordered 800 German aircraft fighters and bomber fighter bombers to attack the 16 fighter bases, British and American, that were on the continent at that time. Between 50 and 80 German airplanes struck our airfield simultaneously with striking the other airfields. Fortunately, Colonel Meyer, our deputy commander, had persuaded General Quesada to let him put up a patrol of 12 airplanes, and just in case something like this happened. Mm-hmm. He was a real fighter strategist.
Right.
Anyway, he as those 50 to 80 airplanes hit our airfield, he was just taking off with 12 pilots on a patrol. As his wheels were coming up on takeoff, a German plane went in front of him, strafing, and he shot him down. Mm. His wheels were still coming up.
Yeah, amazing.
Those 12 pilots, in an air battle right over our field, shot down 24 German airplanes and lost none.
My goodness.
No losses whatsoever.
Well, if you're good enough to shoot somebody down before you get gear up, you know, I mean, man, you don't want to get in front of that guy.
He wound up with 24 victories in the war. During the war.
Yeah.
He was a great leader. I would have flown with him through hell, and I think I did a couple times. But he was one great commander.
We need to take a quick break, but when we return, we'll continue our conversation with P-51 pilot Punchy Powell. Stay tuned.
Folks, it's Ryan Keough from Warbird Information Exchange. Join us every Wednesday evening here on Warbird Radio for WIC's Warbird Weekly Live, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, with rebroadcasts throughout the week. You've been on the WIC's Internet Forum, one of the world's best for Internet Warbird discussion. Now we're coming to you live and on the air. Tune in, take off to discuss the hot topics in Warbirds around the world this week, along with our guests who are working hard to keep them flying well into the future. Call in, write in, or even Skype in to add your voice to the conversation. WIC's wants to hear from you. Again, that's WIC's Warbird Weekly Live, Wednesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, only here on Warbird Radio.
Hey, it's Matt from Warbird Radio Live here to tell you that the new subscriber section on Warbird Radio is absolutely free. That's right, I said it. It's free. Everything is free. The podcast, the image galleries, it's all there, including the special offers, and it's all free. All you have to do is go to the website, warbirdradio.com, log in, and that's it. It's free. Username and password. We might send you an email or two here and there, but it's something you'll want to get. And the best part is, it's all free. What are you waiting on? Sign up today. Warbird Radio Live, the new subscriber section, 100% free.
Hi, this is Mike Chilson of the RC Scale Builder Show. If you're interested in radio control scale modeling, you should check us out at rcscalebuilder.com. It's a great community that offers build threads, tips and tricks, aircraft walkarounds, free plans, and much more. You can find us at www.rcscalebuilder.com. Hope to see you there.
The RC Scale Builder Show, broadcast weekly, right here on Warbird Radio.
This is Don Kennedy, host of Big Band Jump, a part of Warbird Radio. Tune in, take off with the excitement of Warbird Radio.
You're strapped in to Warbird Radio. Tune in, take off.
Welcome back. On this episode of Warbird Radio Presents, we're sitting down with P-51, P-47 pilot Punchy Powell. Here now is the conclusion of our conversation.
After the war, one of the interesting things after the war, we had a big reunion out in, I think it was Colorado Springs, and I got to meet General Adolf Galland, who was the commander of all the German fighter forces. Mm-hmm. And we were having dinner with him, my wife and I, and the I asked him, I said, "General, how many hours did you have in a Messerschmitt 109 when you came up against us?" And he thought for a moment. He said, "Probably 2,000. And I said, "2,000?" He said, "Yeah, I fought in the Spanish Civil War, in the Blitzkrieg of Poland, the Low Countries War, and the Battle of Britain." He said, "I had 84 victories before I ever came up against the American pilots." And he said, "How many hours did you have in the Thunderbolt when you came up against us?" And I very meekly said, 60. He said, "We were the experts and you were the amateurs." But he said, "Your training must have been very good because you learned the tricks of combat very quickly."
Thankfully.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, I told him, "Well, it was on-the-job training."
Yeah.
I only had two gunnery missions before I ever went into combat. Mm. Two gunnery practice missions before I ever went into combat.
Was it intuitive for you? Was it just something that was it intuitive for you? Something that just sort of came natural, or
well,
what do you?
I'm a hillbilly from West Virginia. I had a gun when I was 6 years old.
So strapping them on the wings wasn't any different, I guess.
But we were some of the very early pilots and fighter pilots that were in action, and they just didn't have time to give us. The later pilots got more training in gunnery, but we didn't. And my first victory. I was flying with the colonel and flying his wing, and we were on our way back from a mission, an escort mission, and I was patting myself on the back for being such a good wingman, and all at once he disappeared. I looked around to see if any enemy planes were coming in on us, and when I looked back, he had disappeared. And I looked all around frantically, and there he was going down, upside down, doing a split S. And I went over, I flipped mine over and went down with him. And when we came out of the dive, I was back in position again. And I looked over at his plane, and he was firing his guns. I had not seen a single thing. I had not seen anything. And I look out in front of him, and he's blowing away a German airplane. And in the same formation with the German airplane he was shooting at was another one right in front of me, and I started shooting. I don't think I even looked at the gun sight. I just started shooting.
Wow.
And I mean, we both got our first victories that day. It was the first time we ever fired our guns in air-to-air combat. But my closest call during the war was I landed one on fire. I landed a Mustang on fire. We were taking off on a mission one day, and we don't know what happened. The gas line broke or whatever, but all at once I was a ball of flame. My airplane just, I was 300 feet in the air, and when the plane burst into flame, and the engine quit. I had nowhere to go but down, and fortunately, just off of our field we were taking off from was a farmer's field, and he had plowed the field the day before.
Convenient for you.
He had plowed. Oh, yeah. It saved my life.
Yeah.
As I scooted along on the belly of the airplane, in my belly landing, the soft dirt from the plowing came across the airplane and knocked the flames down long enough I could get out and run. And I ran away from, I got about 30 yards from it when it blew up. So that was my closest call. But I got battle damage 5 times, and only one of them was very serious. That part of my tail shot away. But other than that, the others were just minor. The one dogfight that I remember, one of the guys in my squadron saved my life. I was on the tail of a 109, just getting ready to shoot. And we'd been in this air battle, and all at once, over my radio intercom between planes, he shouted, "Punchy, Punchy, break left, break left." And I immediately forgot the airplane I was about to shoot at, and I pulled the airplane into a tight left turn, and he was over to my right. He was coming in from my right. 109, it was behind me, followed me in the turn. And that put him right in front of Colonel Abbott, or Major Abbott. Major Abbott, and Major Abbott blew him off my tail. I only just got a few holes in my tail, is all.
A small price to pay, though.
But that was that was kind of a close call, too. Yeah. He saved my life, I'm sure. If it hadn't been for him, I wouldn't be here.
Well, tell me some stories about after the mission. What was it like after the mission? Once you guys would land and debrief, what happened?
We would come in, of course, and be debriefed by the S2 officers, and about the mission, whatever we saw, whatever we shot up, whatever. And then we would put our parachutes up, go to the Oak Club and have a drink.
That was the best part about being a fighter pilot, wasn't it?
Yeah. We had some great parties. Well, the fighter pilots always like to party, and we had some great parties. One of our guys, Jack Thornell, who was one of our aces, one night staggering out of this party. And this is really funny. He was staggering out of the party, and we all had bicycles to move around on the base. And he picked up his bicycle, and then he said to himself, "I'm too drunk to ride this bicycle. I'll kill myself." So the colonel's car was sitting, staff car was sitting over there. He crawled into it and drove away. He was on his way back to the Nissen hut. And anyway, he got about 100 yards or so down the road, and there's a little narrow British road, and he rolled it. I mean, he got off the road, and it rolled completely over and came up on the wheels. It didn't hurt him or anything. He climbed out of the thing, and he was seeing, "Man, I'm in some deep doo-doo now." And about that time, the colonel opened the back door and crawled out. He was in the back seat sleeping his drunk off.
I guess it worked out all right, but at the end.
Yeah, the colonel didn't do anything to him. we had a lot of good times, too. You have to have some humor in a war. Yeah. Otherwise, you can't take it very well.
What do you want folks to remember about what you guys did back then?
Well, what I remember most is the great guys I flew with, and the comradeship that we had, the love we had for each other. We knew that our lives depended on each other, and one of the most saddening things was to come back from a mission and crawl into your cot, and the cot next to you was empty. And that happened too often, and then you had to, and you usually had to, if he was a good friend of yours and a good close friend of yours, you usually had to pack up his footlocker and to be sent back to his family and so forth. And those were sad moments. It was lost a lot of good friends. We destroyed 776 German aircraft, but we lost 93 pilots. And my memories are of the great friendships we had and the great guys that we flew with. We were just kids. We weren't heroes. We were just kids, just doing what we'd been trained to do, like any good American young American boy would do. In fact, we used to argue whether we'd get on the next mission or not, because we were eager to do what we had to do. And flying the Mustang and the Thunderbolt were great adventures for young kids. I came out of the hills of West Virginia. I didn't know my butt with both hands on it. And getting to fly Uncle Sam's best fighter was a big thrill.
Well, thank you for your service.
Say, pardon?
Thank you for your service.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I think you talk to any veteran, they don't consider themselves heroes. They were just doing the job that they were trained to do. And we have some great guys today over in Afghanistan and Iraq. I'm very proud of them. They're fighting a kind of war we never got to fight. They don't know the enemy. We knew our enemy. And they're fighting a war that like none we've ever fought before. And I have great respect for them, and I honor them for what they're doing. And they're doing a great job. And even though we might be called the greatest generation, we got a great generation doing it now. That's the way I feel about it.
I'll let you have the final word, Punchy. Anything you want to...
Well, I'm just proud and pleased that I was born at a time when I could do what I was able to do. And that to me is something I'll remember to my dying day. That I had the opportunity to fight for my country.
That's all the time we have for this episode, but stay tuned. There's more Warbird Radio coming up right after this.